Today, we're lifting the lid on a multi-billion euro sector that few ever expected to grow so large, the business of refugee and asylum seeker accommodation in Ireland. Who are the people, we want to know, profiting from protection? Well, we're about to take a deep dive. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. And over the past 5 years, figures show that the state has spent more than 5 billion euro housing people who may have fled war, persecution and economic instability. But increasingly, the money is flowing into the hands of a small number of private companies, hotel chains and entrepreneurs, some of whom have become multi-millionaires in the process. Well, I'm delighted to welcome Killian Woods to the studio. He is, of course, a senior journalist with the Business Post, and he's been investigating just who's profiting from the refugee housing crisis. You're very welcome to News Talk Daily, Killian.
Thanks for having me.
And it is fair to call it a crisis. It has been certainly a crisis over the last 7 years.
It'd definitely be fair to call it a crisis, especially in the numbers that we've seen that are coming into the country. And we've had always had a steady influx of people who are looking for protection. That's not new. But what we've seen over maybe since 22, 23, 24, those years, that's when we saw the massive spike. So if you go back to, let's say, end of 2021, there's about 7,000 people. That's just the asylum, the international protection. And that's gone up to 19,000 at the end of the next year, 26,000 at the end of 2023. And now we're up to about 32,000. It's leveled off at since then of people who are in the asylum seeker accommodation kind of process.
Okay, and that's about a 400% increase over a pretty short period of time.
Yeah, and in a system that was already felt when it was at 7,000 was creaking. And the system that was already felt it was at its maximum and it was just about getting by. So the crisis isn't twofold. It's the crisis of providing the accommodation in Ireland and providing adequate accommodation, which we're required to legally. We have to do that. And also the crisis abroad that we're seeing, whether it's climate crisis, people fleeing wars, or people fleeing, there's some economic migrants in there as well, which is why you see some people who come to Ireland through the system and there then don't secure asylum.
Prior to 2021, the state was largely able to provide accommodation to those seeking asylum through the direct provision system.
Yeah, and I think there was still at the time a lot of issues with how that was being done or who was making money off it. And there were large contracts being given out to kind of regular players in the sector. They would get one contract that would breed another contract that breed another because they were seen as fixers. You go to them, they had a building, they could source a building, they could lease something to then use for asylum seeker accommodation and convert it quickly. Typically people involved in the trades and contracts who are well connected in local communities to be able to get this up and running quite quickly. And then obviously we had the white paper from Catherine Day, which is calling for an end to that system, which the state would take it back into its own control, take it out of private operators' hands and make it state-owned or accommodation. And we're still seeing that unfold because the crisis that happened in the last 3 years has kind of prevented the proper rollout of the state taking control of that system.
So let's just look at some of the numbers because there are figures being published in the Irish Examiner that says 32,689 people are living in IPASS accommodation as to the end of June of this year, 2025.
And about a third of those are children.
And 25,221 are currently staying in emergency IPASS accommodation.
So yes, it's a vast bulk. And those are the people who would be the private operators who've stepped in to say, I have a 100 beds here in Athlone, or I have a small warehouse which I can convert into real emphasis of the word emergency accommodation. These could be temporary walls just erected, like the COVID facilities where we were getting all of our jabs. It's very temporary, just a big hall, just a bed with a bit of a partition between. That's what the extent that can be, or down to tents in a field.
And there's also been a mix of large hotel chains and some private contractors as well.
The way the state does it, they publish every quarter a list of every single payment over 20,000 euro that is paid out for the provision of accommodation or services. Sometimes it's broken down into IPAS versus Ukrainian accommodation services, but that could be for food, security, that could be the actual accommodation itself. So it's all kind of like mixed up. And sometimes it could be the operator of the centre is also buying the food separately. So they've been paid as an intermediary to buy the food, to provide the centre. There's some quite big hotel chains in there. These wouldn't be maybe the biggest earners of it, but the Dalata, who obviously run the Clayton, the Maldron brand, they've received money over many many years for the provision of a small amount of refugee accommodation. TIFCO Hotel Group, they would have like the Holiday Inn and the Travelodge, some of those brands, not all those hotels, but run some of those brands in Ireland. There's Crown Plaza brand as well. And then you'd have obviously then people who we come to name like as regular operators in this sector. They're only involved in this sector. They can be sometimes the directors of the companies or people receiving money who you've never heard of. They don't have a LinkedIn page. They don't have any presence anywhere. And it's hard to tell sometimes that those are just a local fixer who happens to be the director of a company. And it's hard to trace back to who ultimately owns it sometimes.
But you do, don't you, Cillian? That's your job. That's your expertise. That's why you're here.
Again, where it can be done. But like a current piece of research I'm doing is trying to see how many of the operators trace back to foreign companies. They're companies that are based in Ireland or are businesses based in Ireland, but they ultimately trace back to a foreign company, which could be the Isle of Man in Guernsey, in Gibraltar. That is untraceable. But I've found out the owners of a lot of the companies. Some of them are very obvious. They could just be a local cafe owner. They can be, as I said, the directors of the latter, a very big business. But there's about, I think, 2,000 plus companies. So it's a lot of companies to look into.
Just to be clear, what they're doing is completely legal, but really frustrating when you're a journalist.
Yeah, well, I mean, these people, they've done absolutely nothing wrong. In fact, they've stepped in to provide a service that the state has struggled to provide itself and has to provide itself. So, you know, we've seen recently that there's some legal cases been taken against the state for the inability to provide accommodation. If these private operators didn't stand in, there'd be a wave of those legal cases of people feeling that a tent is not adequate for them or the accommodations provided or the service provider are not adequate. So these people have stepped in, albeit making a lot of money in between. And that maybe is where the premium comes from. The state sees that it is a crucial service. I think that some of the people who are involved in the system can be feel victimized by it or feel, why are you singling me out? I think the reason we're covering it is that this is just state money. Last year, about 1.8 billion, near 2 billion, it would be a fair estimate, of money spent on this emergency accommodation. And any sector, any business that are receiving that much state subsidy to run, because some of these would be failing businesses if they weren't operating in this space, is fair game to look into.
It's your taxpayers' money. We're just saying this is where it's being spent. And it would be helpful if there's a bit more transparency around how some of these contracts have been secured, what the profits are, and we don't have an awful lot of that information.
And there's a massive knock-on effect. You introduced to any economy extra 2 billion of cash every year that is separate to what they're running on at the moment. That cash will be chased, or that, and especially if there's a better profit margin or there's potential to make a better profit margin off it. So there's a huge opportunity for this to displace what was going on already in the town. There's tourist towns in Donegal and other on the Wild Atlantic Way have taken out, let's say, maybe the only hotel in the town, or taken a hotel out of service. That then has huge knock-on effects, regardless of if your motivations are xenophobia, if you're out protesting outside it, if it's just you're arguing that I'm protesting that there's not value for money in this deal, or I'm protesting that I own a local cafe, or I own the local Super Value or a local store, that's going to have a negative effect from fewer tourists coming in, because the state is paying for this business to run, but not the same kind of consumer, that same type of person staying in it. So you'd see why, in fairness, this money has a huge capacity to, and has, we will see the results maybe in years to come, has displaced a lot of business that's already going on in towns.
Okay, let's just look at the money again and some of the top earners in this system. Just how much money are the top 10, let's say, making?
The top 10 would be earning anywhere between, in a calendar year, about 20 million to 70. That 70 would be the top. That was the Cape Wrath Hotel Unlimited. That's the company that's behind the City West Hotel.
Which anybody who's been to a conference in the last 10 years or remembers getting swabbed for COVID, the COVID testing, I remember that car park, will be familiar with at City West on the outskirts of Dublin.
Huge complex, like at a real stretch of capacity for 3,000 plus people in it. So they were only about 70 million a year. And then there's a huge drop off then to the next one, about 45 million. That's a company called the IGO Emergency Management. That's a business owned by a small cafe in Sallynagan. There's other regular names on there. People be familiar, like Moz New, a long-term operator in the sector, like Travelodge earned, one of their brands earned 37 million. Holiday Inn Express earned 32 million last year. Red Cow, Moran Hotel, that's 35 million. As you see, then there's a drop-off into other businesses, that, like one's owned by Seamus McEnany. He's the former Mana and manager. Crops up with a lot of companies. The McEnany family are connected to a lot of these companies and would have individual entities. Brimwood is one of their main companies. They earned 24 million last year. This is revenue, so this is not money they're pocketing from provision of services.
And I'm just looking here at 50 companies accounted for 214.8 million in Q1 of 2025. So that's obviously the first 3 months of this year. So we're talking 50 smaller companies all earning about 4 million each for the running of these accommodation centres.
And that was the vast majority. Like, let's say, just to take Q1 of this, the first 3 months of this year, in total, 411 million was paid out for everyone. So there's 50 companies making the bulk of it.
And as you said there, to be clear, this is what they are earning. This is not what the profits of the companies are. But unfortunately, what makes it really difficult is that we don't know what the profits are here. And that's why scrutinising these companies and these contracts and what their earnings is actually very difficult.
Yeah, because you could, let's say, just take, for example, City West, the Cape Wrath Hotel Unlimited. That's an unlimited company. That means it doesn't need to publish as detailed accounts. The information is all there. It's in a black box. Maybe some people in the state know how much they're making. I doubt they'd have to disclose that. That'd be very commercially sensitive information. Then you go down to the smaller players who are limited companies who do have to publish regular accounts. Now, some don't publish regular accounts, but a lot of them do. And that's when we start to see what they're earning as opposed to what they're just being paid. Because I think there's a huge distinction. I know a lot of headlines are made out of this person who received I think the Irish Times reported recently, Seamus McInerney's companies earned 200 million in the last, I think, 2018 for provision of emergency accommodation. But if it costs 199.9 million to run it, which is feasible in any hospitality business, maybe they're the saints stepping in to provide a social service. But what we see when we delve into some of the companies is that's not the case.
Yeah, and we saw, I suppose, Ego Cafe was one of the few companies that we did get a bit of information about. It's trading as Ego Emergency Management Services. It received 29.9 million, including VAT and state payments, for accommodating IP applicants. And it's co-owned by directors Anne Murphy and Christina Andrees on a 50-50 basis. And the two of them shared 4.68 million in remuneration and pension contributions in 2024, and it raised eyebrows.
Yeah, like that's a company I've been kind of tracking since they crept up into the top 10, and they fast came onto the radar out of nearly nowhere. So the company that receives the money, or the business that receives the money, the distinction is Ego Emergency Management. That's a business name that trades, which is owned by Ego Cafe Limited, which on the face of it is just a cafe in Sallynagan. I'd say maybe twice the size of this studio.
Not big, folks.
Like the size of a studio apartment, maybe a little bit bigger than a studio apartment.
Okay, and look, we all know our coffees are dear these days. I paid €4 for an Americano recently, but I'm not quite sure it's leading to profits.
So that was a business running on absolute wafer thin margins until a few years ago. In 2020, same directors as the company, they earned €22,000 in director's fees between them. Now, they were probably earning a wage on the side of that as well, but that's the year that they weren't earning any money from emergency accommodation or provision of those services. It went up to €45,000, €133,000, then up to €1.24 million, and now last year, which was the extraordinary, like €4.6 million, which was, again, a lot of that was just pure cash they were given in the year, just paying themselves for the services. But also then there was pension contributions, which is a way a lot of the companies are using, again, completely legal tax arrangements to limit how much tax they have to pay by putting it into a pension, which then they can access when they draw down their pension.
Which you're kind of encouraged to do, actually. I just wish I could put 910,000 into a pension contribution. But
so do I. And I think that's where it's interesting to look at these companies. If you just look at their profit margin, that doesn't tell the story necessarily, because the profit margin of some of the companies, which is between, I think the companies I looked at 50 companies, just handpicked 50 companies that were publishing detailed accounts. The profit margin was roughly 40%. So these are companies involved in food provision, in accommodation provision. It could be driving a bus to and from the doctors. It could be anything. Regardless of what the actual pure revenue, they're making a 40% profit.
Just to be clear, because I have done loads of interviews with the hotel sector and the restaurant sector over the last number of years about the profit margin, and we are told the profit margins are generally single digits in those industries. So to jump from single digits to 40% is quite phenomenal.
Yeah, it's huge. And even if you're in the teens, it would be very appealing, especially if you were looking at very quiet hotel or B&B in a rural area that struggles to get by just by on its summer revenue. And now the state's saying, I'll give you, it could be €100 per head per night in deep of January. Again, single out an island, maybe an Achill Island. It is not getting people paying €100 a night for every single bed. So you have the opportunity to fill out your property all year round at a set rate for a business, recurring revenue. That doesn't necessarily always paint the picture, because as you said there, the Ego Cafe, which is also making a decent profit, how much it's making is not reflected in its profit, because the profit has been eaten away at by the fact they're paying themselves 4.6 million. That would have been in the profit, and the pension contributions would have been in the profit. And we don't even know what they're earning in wages. So that's said. So there's also two employees. It's the two directors. Bare bones, 8 pages worth of financials compared to some of the companies that might have to publish 40. But if you just look at iGo Cafe, 45 million last year, the directors paid themselves 4.6 million. So roughly they're getting 10% of what's coming in for themselves. And there's a profit made on top of that. And there's pension contributions.
And look at that as just one example. People have jumped on, I suppose, to talk about the profits being made within this industry. Asylum, I think the asylum billionaires, they're calling it, aren't they, in the UK? But industry experts, Killian, suggest that there are high margins being made across the board because these are guaranteed contracts, because there's minimum upgrade to the facilities required because you don't have customers coming in and out all the time. And the biggest problem, I suppose, was that the government was in a really weak bargaining position when it came to agreeing these contracts and negotiating these contracts.
No position. They were faced with it. Since it's calmed down a bit now, people maybe would say, well, it hasn't calmed down, but we are down to maybe 180 to 200 people coming in a week at the moment, which sounds like a lot, but it was up at 500, 600. It was about a huge numbers when people were coming to the country.
Let's talk about Seamus Banty McEnany. You mentioned him there. He is a name that'll be familiar to GAA fans. He was the former manager of Monaghan GAA. Talk to me about the role that him and his family have played in securing and providing accommodation.
I've never managed to chat to Seamus McEnany about any of this. I've tried to contact.
Would you like him? Seamus, if you're listening.
Not on the line. His family have many limited companies that he's connected to. If you add it up, I'd say they'd be in the higher of the top 10. The McEnany name is all over these companies. Not necessarily always his. Some of the companies do trace back to him. Some of them appear to be maybe a brother, an uncle, some as young as teenagers, having pension money put aside. The McEnany family are earning a huge amount of money from this. So that even bleeds out through the corporate structures. You can see individual companies are paying out hundreds of thousands of euro in directors' fees. Now, it's hard to say exactly how much he's getting from this.
Firms, you reckon, have earned about 200 million.
That's both refugee accommodation and homeless accommodation since 2018. So they were already well established in this area. But again, I think he's probably seen as a fixer. I mean that in a complimentary way. He is seen as someone who, if we need accommodation quick for 40 people have come in and we need to put them in beds and we don't have anywhere and it's completely full, they go to like any,
because
like,
he either directly owns people. He either directly owns accommodation provide, or he indirectly sources accommodation from other providers.
Yeah.
And he leases that from the owners through some contractual arrangements, and then he provides it to the state.
And
that's the fixer side of it that you're talking about.
This is the thing, like, based on the corporate structures, we also don't know always if that is the ultimate owner or the actual, like, they're the beneficiary of the cash who then is passing it on to someone else. If there's that's where I get back into looking at where they trace up to, where these companies trace back to, is very interesting, because then you start to see these people who have no business, no experience in property, no experience in hospitality sometimes. I'm not stating this about Seamus McEnany, but there's many directors of companies, they look like they don't exist. Like, their names are all over these companies and it says they own them, but I find it hard to believe some of them do actually run some of these companies. I'm not going to single anyone out. It's very interesting to see some of these companies are just with apparently faceless directors.
Are these contracts, or is there a way of properly scrutinising these contracts, Killian? Is there transparency here at all?
Before I criticise the lack of transparency, I'll give one benefit to them, is the Department of Integration, which has kind of chopped and changed between being under Roderick O'Gorman when he was in government, his power, to now Jim O'Callaghan, Department of Justice. It's jumped between departments. It's kind of handed off as a bit of a problem. I think it's quite good that they do publish at least the money that's paid out. Quarterly, at least, on a quite regular basis, they publish a detail of how much the money goes. So we do know exactly who gets the money, we know exactly what companies get the money. But where you can criticise them for transparency is we have no idea what these contracts look like. I've seen some of the calls for expression and how they go out. It's as simple as name, telephone number, your address of property, and how many beds you can supply. I don't know what due diligence can be done on some of these properties. It wouldn't be surprising in the panic that they had to get some beds and they were contacting like directors of services from like Mayo County Council. Just, you're getting 200 people arriving on Monday. It's
find me something.
You need to find somewhere there that you need to house them.
And that was the pressure they were under.
There was huge pressure been placed on local authorities to source accommodation. But we don't know what due diligence was done. And we see now some centres are being closed down for not being adequate. But then when you have this many beds, like, that's going to be, there's hotels in the site that are closed down for being inadequate. There's your regular restaurant, you'd be surprised to see this closed down just for being inadequate. It's not that necessarily there's a big problem with accommodation being inadequate in the direct provision or asylum system. albeit I think the standards are probably not great.
The state did pay $148 million to buy City West and 50 acres earlier this year. So they're going to take ownership and possession of that. So at least at the end of this process, they have this building and they have this 50 acres as opposed to the $200 million that they've paid out for the last 5 years. And essentially,
it was a great deal.
Do we see any other efforts to move away from this reliance, almost complete reliance, on private sector providers?
So Jim O'Callaghan said that's what he wants to do. It's not necessarily surprising that he would call for that. Like, I think Roger Cameron was the same, just saw that the hand he was dealt was, you're in crisis mode. There's no time for thinking about how do we get
strategically
away. Yeah, we just need to get beds. And in fairness, Jim O'Callaghan has taken it on at a time when there is less pressure than there was. Still pressure, there is less pressure in the system. He wants to move it away. And government line is to follow through in the Catherine Day report, which is to own door state accommodation for people seeking asylum. Now, that's aim for the moon and you might reach just below it. Buying City West is a huge statement. We often criticise the state for misspending money. That probably will be a very good investment long term, not to scaremonger. This is permanent. It's a crisis and it'll always be a crisis. This is a permanent thing with us. There will always be people fleeing war, fleeing issues of climate change. And so having an asset like this for housing of people when we need it is very, very useful. And if $148 million is, I think it's a very good deal considering how much they're paying out for it. I'm a bit perplexed about why the owner sold. The state had nowhere else to go. There's no other facility of City West size that also has massive land banks around it that could be, you could build more.
Maybe they just fancied going and lying on a sun lounger in the Bahamas and spending some of their profits.
The people connected to that are very, very rich people already. I don't think they were waiting necessarily on a payday from the City West.
But the Ryanair flight, no.
But on the face, it's a very good deal. And Jim O'Callaghan, when he was announcing that, said, I want to move towards more state facilities. The problem is, Geert, you try and build any one of these anywhere, you're going to have to build them at scale. They're not going to build 1,000 centres to house 10 people. They're going to want to build 3 or 4 to house thousands at any given time. There's nowhere in the country that will be doable.
But there'll be resistance.
Oh, there'll be resistance.
Because, we know that.
Yeah, because we're looking at multiple, maybe like a children's hospital level of investment across the country on things that will be not really earn any votes.
Yeah, but at the same time, you are looking at $5 billion being spent over a 5 year period. And I do think a lot of local communities have seen this. There's a lot of resentment felt towards people who are making a lot of money out of the system.
Look, some of the protests against these centres opening up in towns and communities, there's definitely a xenophobic element to some of the protests, but there's been more entertainment now, I think, by politicians and even the media about legitimate concerns. Was previously, don't mention that to me. That's code word for I don't want foreigners in my area. I feel these are people are unsafe. Appropriate spending of taxpayers' money is a completely legitimate concern, and it's absolutely questionable now. And that there's definitely been questionable spending of taxpayers' money on this. If the profit margins are that high in some of these companies, or it's questionable, are they cutting corners to make more profit? And also, I think the services in areas is a legitimate concern now. No one's going to be voting in their TD next time saying, well done, you built that iPad centre at budget. That's not going to happen. Although the knock-on effects of doing that, if they can explain it, are huge, because that will bring hotels back into use. That will bring...
It's a positive thing.
It is, but it's a very tough thing to sell.
All right. Look, at Cillian Woods, thank you for all of your research and your deep dive into that topic, and for joining us here today at News Talk Daily HQ. That's our lot. If you have any thoughts on what Cillian and I have been talking about, you are welcome to send me an email. The address is newstalkdaily@newstalk.com. Until the next time, from me, Ciara Doherty. Goodbye.